When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When this boy meets world.
What up, Bruce?
What up, Bruce?
And we're going to bro meets world.
When this boy meets world.
I'm tired.
Ooh, and I'm exhausted.
And welcome back. Truer words have never been spoken, honestly. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Except you're actually Siege.
Oh, yeah, I'm Siege. If you need to know.
And I'm actually Tony Curtis, if you were curious at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are your Boy Meets World Fancast. Welcome back. Glad to have you here for another episode, another season 7 episode.
Another season 7.
Right off the heels of our conversation with Erica Montolfo-Burra, who wrote this episode.
So interesting that we got to talk to her, like, right before we got to this episode. Such a great conversation. Loved having her on. You know, she's done incredible work. I didn't love this episode, if I'm being real. No,
there are lots of stuff,
Erica.
There are lots of stuff that I want to talk about. There are things that I really do like about this episode, and then there are things where I'm like, man, I'm curious, like, how much was, like, put in and how much was, like, nope, this was my idea from beginning to end. Because some things are like, yes, this is good. And then some things are like, this was thrown in there. I don't know. We'll get to the conversation. But speaking of conversation, if you guys would like to have a conversation with us, you can reach out to us at BrumMeetsWorld at gmail.com or on at BrumMeetsWorld on all the places. You can join our Patreon where we have all of these conversations, merch, polls, all the things that you guys enjoy.
All also, that shit.
All that jazz. And thank you guys for subscribing to our YouTube. You guys have really pushed those numbers up. You've been really great at it. All in all, we did the housekeeping stuff and just wanted to get that out of the way before we get into this episode. Let's get into this episode because I actually am really excited to talk about this episode. Okay, but in order to do that, that means you would have to do the tell me about it.
Tell us about it. Coin to ping, I hate their place. Guilt trip their parents to buy them a new house, only to learn what life as a husband and wife is all about.
A little clunky, but you got the synopsis in there. And also the other day, I posted one of our tell me about it on our social, and someone was like, I read this in TC's voice. So I thought
Love it.
Okay, you guys, this is season 7, episode 10, Picket Fences. Corey and Topanga continue to look for a place to live, coming across a house with a nook that they want Amy and Alan to co-sign on. In a B storyline, Eric and Jack get a new boss at the student union. In a C storyline, Rachel, Angela, and Sean all consider their own living arrangements.
Lots going on in this episode.
A lot is going on. What's interesting is, I think, with the exception of Jack and Eric, I think everything kind of makes sense. And Jack and Eric even make sense if we were to do it in a different time. Like, remember how we were talking about The Honeymoon Is Over and how Eric was there for comic relief and we didn't really take this storyline and put it in last week's episode with Eric and Jack. It, like, does it, like, divert from the story? Is it? No, it isn't. But at least it makes sense to give Eric. And then we can spend a little bit more time on Rachel, Sean, and Angela. Like, that's my thing.
The Jack and Eric storyline is fine. Like, we can get there. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but it's just fine. It doesn't do anything to help the episode, but, you know, Eric has a lot of funny moments in this episode. Yes. I think more funny moments than he did last episode. There are some great, wonderful moments with this episode. overall, the story that Alan, the lesson that Alan tries to teach Corey, I think is such a classic TGIF episode. This is the kind of story I would want for a season 7 of Boy Meets World. Of like, hey, you are leaving the nest and now there are all new challenges for you to face and new lessons for you to learn. You thought you learned it all in school, but now that you're in the real world, you have to learn the real shit. I would love it if that's like the primary focus. But there are some things in this episode, and we're going to get to it, about the way they treat living together, the way they treat Sean and Angela's character particularly, that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. So we can get into all of it, but that's my off.
I completely agree. So it's so funny. All right. So to your point, my first reactions were I liked the A storyline a lot. The B storyline, I was like, most of my bra moments will come from this B storyline. Yeah. But the C storyline even had, like, there were weird things where it's like, again, we are acknowledging that everyone is moving in together and that Angela and Sean get to have a moment of being like, hey, we're living together and we get to do that. And that's new for us and that's fun for us. And Rachel's not really as much of a factor as it needs to be. Yeah. And we even address that. So I'm like, oh, we're actually addressing a lot of things that I feel need to be addressed. And it was written in my mind as someone who paid attention to the last few episodes.
Definitely.
I like that. However, to your point, I feel like some things were mixed messaging at best, if not just downright bad lessons.
Yes.
As Sean and Angela are concerned. And then as far as Corey and Topanga are concerned, I do like the lessons that we're learning. And I like that we get to see them more as a couple. Like, it's so funny. After they got married, they are kind of writing them as a duo.
Yeah.
And it's fun to see Danielle get to act.
Absolutely.
And actually participate. Because for so long, she was just a sideline character. And now she gets to actively be involved with Corey's hijinks.
Yeah, we're seeing more Topanga than I feel like we have in a while in terms of just like her perspective, her voice, her ideas getting thrown out there. Like you said, her partnership with Corey is becoming more of a tag team duo in a way that I think really works both comedically and dramatically. Can we just talk about this opening scene?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go straight to it.
Yeah, yeah. So we cut to the apartment and we see Sean and Angela there. And they're basically talking about like
the playhouse.
They're playing house. They're having a great time. And clearly they're fucking. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like, that's kind of one of the things that is implied by Corey is that they're sluts and they're
living in sin and they're sluts.
Living in sin and they're doing the deed. And I thought it was really funny, the idea of them getting to play house, getting to be like, hey, we have our time. We are with each other. Life was so good before the kids came. Mm-hmm. And the kids are, according to Topanga, because they are still avoiding being in their own house.
We're seeing is that Angela and Sean were like, well, I guess you could spend a few nights at our place. We don't know how long this has been going on, though.
We don't, but also it's interesting because this episode allows Angela and Sean to be kind of the secure couple, at least for the first half of it. And I think that's really great to see.
Before they're shamed out of it?
We're going to get there because I don't understand why they are. Like, did feel that was the one part out of everything that felt forced. Like, I could allow so much, but like, Angela and Sean are doing well. They are living together, and the idea of them living together is good. And the idea of them having to figure out how to balance, hey, we both haven't had stability. We both haven't had a family. We both are constantly moving around and switching places. So now we're in one place at one time. We are saying that we're committed with each other. Let's talk and see how that goes. And it just kind of, the show makes up a reason for them not to do that.
Not to do that. And I would just say it would have been so interesting to see two couples where it's like, okay, the only difference between us is that you're married and we're not.
Yes.
And like, okay, so are there other differences to come into play? Are there other things to go into that? Or is it a thing of where Corey's complaining and Sean's looking at him and saying, hey, you could have done this. You could have just dated. Like, yeah. You guys decided to get married. So, like, I could have done without the shame aspect. But, like I said, there's other things we can focus on. I really think that the story of Corey and Topanga was strong enough on its own of them wanting to go get a house, getting excited about a starter home, asking for a loan. Like, all of there's tons to do there. We don't need to muddy up the story with Sean and Angela.
No. Let's continue with Corey and Topanga, which is to say that, as you pointed out, they are staying with Sean and Angela and Rachel at this point in time, and they're like, "You gotta go." You're cramping our style. Go, and they go, "You don't think we have other friends?" And I like the idea that they're acknowledging they don't have any other friends.
No,
why would anyone be friends with them outside of these three that are like almost required to be friends with them for various reasons? And then we see them move out, and Corey brings Topanga to this house. And I'm already like, no, whatever it is, no. And yeah. I also like this idea of like, we get a little bit of Topanga being kind of self-aware of like, hey, we can't afford this. We can't, the real estate agent is being sneaky, and she's like, you're lying to him and you're letting him believe that he can afford this when we know you can't. We can barely afford a sandwich. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like this a little bit. Go ahead.
I can really understand Topanga's frustration here. In fact, I think it should have been a little bit more, because I think that really Corey did something that was really messed up, which is to say like, hey, we've been living in like a roach motel, essentially. And it's been like the biggest struggle of our middle class lives, essentially. So no matter how like it may look from the outset, for us, this is trauma. And so the way I'm going to do that is to promise you things that I can't follow through with, or I haven't thought through. And like, Topanga comes out really hard at first at being like, you know what, Corey, this is cruel. She said, it's so cruel for you to bring me here. And the thing is that like, and I want to spend more time on the scene, but eventually Topanga kind of comes on board in a way where I'm just like, you got to use your head too, Topanga. Like, where are you, valedictorian? Like, I really need you to use your brain smarts to kind of help Corey. Like, if Corey's the idea man, you need to be the person who's like, wait, logically, that's not going to work because of A, B, and C or something. Like, I need her to use her intellect in this relationship, because it seems like Corey just keeps coming up with schemes and convincing her to go along with it based off of the honeymoon episode and this. And so I want her to be a little bit more combative and like to challenge him more.
I'm going to say something a little risky, but I think what you're dealing with right now is white feminism. Like they said, it was a lot easy for Topanga when everything was good, when she had a bed to sleep in, when she could put her hair down, when she could wash in a shower with water that she felt comfortable in. It was easy to be like all for it. But, you know, for rights and speaking up. But right now she does kind of, she wants a comfortable living space. Yeah. And that I understand. I do understand it is like, there is something real about the fact that she would be like, hey, we can't do this. And the moment they kind of make it feasible and they're like, all you have to do is get someone to sign. I mean, we saw her get a loan in not Hawaii.
So yeah.
Of course, she's like, all right, I'll just take out another loan. How bad could that be? Cosign. I do think it's, again, what bothers me is that we don't even acknowledge Topanga's parents. And that's one of the things I meant to ask Erica about. I was like, did you guys ever once think, why don't we even have like a line that says, because they said, we just need two adults to co-sign, two parents. And they go directly to Alan and Amy. And I'm like, y'all didn't even try Topanga's parents. It's crazy.
You especially know because Topanga's parents has so much to make up for. Like, yeah, that's the person you go to.
Exactly. You go to the one who you need to guilt trip. Not the one who told you last week he wasn't helping you. That's not going to do you any favors. But really quickly, before we move on, I want to hit our roll call, because we have, this is where we meet
the real estate agent,
Orly, who plays Mrs. Stevens. She was a character.
Edith, yeah.
Yeah, she was a character actress from the 60s and 70s, most notably Laugh-In. She was also the voice of the wardrobe in Beauty and the Beast and Miss Maple in A Goofy Movie. And I included that one specifically for you.
And you know me, I'm a diehard Goofy Movie fan. I have no idea who Miss Maples is in that movie.
She's the secretary.
Oh, for Principal Mazur.
Exactly. also, I will say that she was too big for me. Like, when I found out that she was best known for Laugh-In, I was like, that makes sense. Because this is a Laugh-In performance. This is a, like, over-the-top 60s comedic performance. And yeah. I'm like, I don't understand why we're doing this.
It's
like,
giving it's- Julie Happerfield from the... who was the wedding planner when they were planning their wedding, like just really big guest spotty, like very sitcom guest spotty. Like, I don't really know this, but I know television enough that I'm going to do this a certain way. And, you know, it doesn't work for me. She doesn't work for me. What is probably the most interesting part about this whole thing? Two bed, two bath, Philadelphia,
$80,000.
What? What?
I immediately got angry. $80,000 for a house.
For a house.
And they were struggling. And I was like, every millennial is dying right now. No.
I'm sorry. You don't mean 800,000? No, just 80,000?
Just 80.
This is chump change. This is embarrassing at this point.
Which, I mean, also, it does make sense why they would be like, oh, in college, maybe we can afford this. Yeah. Maybe you can.
Maybe you could. Well, it's so funny because they're like, do you know how long it's going to take us to save $80,000? And I was like, I don't know. How long is it going to take for you? Because.
Well, here's again, you just need to save to put down the deposit. That's what's crazy.
And there's so much logistics about that whole thing that needs to be talked through. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well, because what they do is, again, she tells them that they could have this house. All they need are co-signers, essentially. Mm-hmm. They go to Alan and Amy, and they're like, hey, we found a place. It's great. All we need is for you to sign this. I was like, it felt, I think, intentionally. It felt very much like, we just need you to sign this permission slip. Don't look at it.
Don't look at it. Yeah. Don't think too much about it. We've already thought this through. And exactly. I love that Alan sees right through it. And he's just like, well, Amy said, don't call them stupid out loud. And Alan's like, I didn't say that. She's like, well, I was thinking of that. Love that.
Yeah, that was a really funny joke. And then, oh, okay. I know what I was going to say. Alan and Amy being brought back in was something that Erica said last week, which I thought was really important. She said that they've kind of removed Feeny and they are now relying on the parents again. And I was like, yes, we are using Allie and Amy again to tell stories, to teach their children, for Corey to learn from. And I do like this. I like this use of Alan and Amy. I feel they work as a couple in this episode.
Yeah.
But then also the idea of them saying you can't buy a house before you have a job is like, it seems so simple. And yet I feel like a lot of people don't understand that you can't put the cart before the horse.
Well, again, this is where I'm like, Topanga, you're so smart. Like, why does that simple math need to be explained to you that you need a job for you to buy a house? Like, why is that something you can't figure out on your own? And again, at no point is Corey looking at Topanga or Topanga looking at Corey being like, maybe we should get jobs. Like, it's not happening. So what are they expecting?
Especially when you consider the fact that they're like, hey, we're going to... Corey's like, we're not going to miss a payment. It's like, but you don't have a job. How are you not? Why are you mad that I'm literally just asking you, where's your money coming from?
It's giving Martin. It's giving, you don't got no damn job.
You ain't got no job, Corey. Exactly. I think it's interesting because they don't even go into this, but like Alan being like, hey, you need a job, figure it out. Of course, this place is tough. Of course, you don't like where you live. Because one of the things they don't make an argument for is buying a house doesn't stop the expenses. Like, it's not just buying the house. It's the utilities. It's the upkeep. It's all of the furniture. There's so much more that goes into it that you can't just add on to your loan, even if we were to co-sign for this. So you have to learn to take care of the things that you have before you can get something bigger.
Can I also just say something that I found annoying both during the original viewing of this and when we rewatched it, which is the thing that gets them so fucking excited for this house is a nook. Now, let me explain. This, the nook that's featured in this home is not like a like a sit-in nook that you could like read a book in. It's literally just like an awkward little concave in the living room. And let me just tell you, fuck those. They're not fun. You have to look for very specific furniture to fit it. And it's like, it's a pain in the ass. Like, there's no benefits to having a nook. Like, just get like a couch in our chair or something. Like, I don't know. The fact that that was the selling point, that they were just like, well, we'll have a nook. I just couldn't get on board with it.
I'm not going to lie. I think this is a Michael Jacobs thing because the Torkelsons, one of his early things, has a nook. Like, she always like sat out in the window and she did that. And then in Girl Meets World, her bedroom has a nook that
they
she
chose
sits
it for the nook.
They chose it for the nook. The nook is important to a Michael Jacobs story. So I wanted to make that connection.
Okay.
But what is even funnier is in the next scene, we have Sean, Angela, Topanga, and Corey at the current apartment.
Yeah, the married dorms. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love Topanga here being like, ah! Like it was again, yeah, a comedic performance from Danielle. It's really funny. But Sean goes to them, hey, you could put a small bookshelf right here. There are built-ins.
There's a built-in bookshelf right on the other side of the wall. And they spend the whole episode looking at the other side being like, a bookshelf would look good there. And look behind you.
That was my one thing. The one thing, they kept talking about these bookshelves and you know what? We'll get a bookshelf. You can put a bookshelf. And I was like, you have built-ins right over there and you want a nook and you can't take care of
bookshelf. Also, I've literally never seen y'all read.
Yeah, like, because remember, like, again, she said Angela and Sean are reading. Corey and Topanga do not read anymore.
Do not read. So what are you putting on those bookshelves? Let's be real.
Anyway, I thought this was really funny because this, I thought we would bring it up. But, like, Sean is walking around and he's like, you have a good space.
I love that. Yeah.
Type of space that you and I talked about having. And I liked that Sean was, like, looking around and being like, this isn't bad, you guys. Yes, it's a fixer-upper, but you have to fix it up.
Yeah. And can I just tell you that, and I don't know if this is true across the board, but in my personal experience, it feels like people who grew up low income or who like had to live in a bunch of different apartments or things like that have a little bit more imagination as to how to fix something up because they've been forced to live in places where it's like, we have to. The Corey and Topanga of it all, where it's like, well, we can't find anywhere else to live, so we might as well make this work. Whereas when I talk to people who are like, oh, I lived in my parents' house my whole life, like they sometimes struggle to have the same imagination when looking at like interior design shit or just kind of like that whole organization or functionality or fixer-upper stuff. It just feels like something they struggle with. And that's just been my experience. I'm not trying to like speak for everyone, but
I get what you're saying. I'm gonna say, so I think it may not be necessarily a class thing, although class is important, but I do think that it has something to do with like whether or not your parents, and sometimes their parents did this because they didn't have the finances, your parents instilled in you the importance of taking care of your own things and being resourceful and cleaning up after yourself. Like we kind of know that Eric and Corey and all of these boys have always had Amy. Like, we don't see them cleaning up on a regular basis. We don't see them going out and buying the groceries and all this other stuff. They come from a working class family, like a middle class family, but we don't see them actually doing the work. And I think that is important because, as you said, I look at their entire apartment, I'm like, oh, you go get a wet vac. You clean that rug. You like y'all are sitting on that couch, and that is a bold choice for me.
Yeah.
Like, you get rid of that couch, you know? Like, you buy yourself a blow-up mattress. You start washing the walls. They're, like, I look at that place, and all I see is potential. Because as you said, I grew up in a space where we're going to make the most of what we currently have. What do we currently have?
Sure.
How can we make that better? What is functional? Like Sean says, Corey, fix the pipes.
Yeah.
Like, that's your job. That's what
take
you do.
Take some pride in your place and learn to fix your pipes is what he says to him, which is so interesting that Sean has that outlook that Alan is trying desperately to teach Corey. Like, for whatever reason, Sean gets it when Corey doesn't. And I think that's really interesting.
Well, you say for whatever reason, and I think we talked about it. They don't say it, and I kind of wish they had. I do wish that they had said, or they had allowed a line of Sean just being like, dude, think of where I came from.
Yeah.
And honestly, I wish, yeah. tell me that this isn't doable. Are you saying that I wasn't doable? Like, I didn't make it work? Like, my parents didn't make it work? We were able to operate with less. You have so much going for you, and you know that I come from a family that doesn't.
Sure. Or just the idea of like, bro, you've been over to my trailer multiple times and now you're acting like you're too good for this. Or were you too good for it then? Like really kind of ask him about it. Which really interesting. Go ahead. I was just going to say, the thing that I really like is, you know, Sean's telling him, hey, you have to earn it. Like, you know, you're just, this is your place. You have to fix it up. If you want nice things, you have to earn it. And then Corey rebuttals with, well, you guys have a good deal and you're not even married and that's not fair. So maybe you need to rethink your ship because, yeah, we're struggling, but you guys aren't married. So boom, sinners. And I'm like, what is happening?
It made, like, again, it was weird because this idea of Corey, like, I first of all think that Corey was just kind of speaking out of turn and of course saying things, and Corey is being entitled and privileged to be like, oh, you guys have it so easy and you're not even like it's easy to say that when you have a nice place to live, which goes back to what I was saying. However, for him to say that because Sean and Angela aren't married, therefore they don't really understand the struggle and they don't deserve to have a nice place to sleep. As you said, no one required you to get married. Getting married isn't even the norm for the white middle class storyline that everyone adheres to. Like, you go to school, you go to college, then you get married. You moved it ahead.
Yeah. So
you moved it out of order. You did what you wanted to do. And all of a sudden you're mad at Sean for not following you along in your choices.
That's and stupid. Also, are they so conservative to not think that a couple in college would live together and not be married? Like, are we really doing this?
I feel like, okay, so like in universe, it makes sense that Corey would be a little jealous of Sean. Because again, Corey's whole idea is I should be doing better than Sean. And if I'm not doing better than Sean, then the universe isn't right. That's how we've seen this happen several times. Remember the episode where Sean got the job or the internship and Corey didn't?
Yeah.
It's like that competing thing where Corey is like, no, in our lives, I should be doing better than Sean. And the fact that I'm not means that I have to tear Sean down a little bit. Terrible friend.
Honestly, however, I get Corey being jealous. I get Corey projecting. He's kind of doing that to everyone throughout the episode. So I don't really think of it as a personal thing he's doing to Sean. My problem is Sean validating what Corey says.
I was going to say that the problem that follows this is that the show itself is taking a conservative lens. The show itself later has us re-examine Angela and Sean's and be like, hey, we didn't earn this. We have it too good. We need to suffer. And I was like, no, you don't.
No.
You've suffered. Like, this idea of I need to suffer in order to enjoy life, It's wrong.
Also, like, that doesn't work with a character who's been suffering for 6 years. Whereas Corey and Topanga are like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to us. Sean has gone through 9 of those in the last 3 years. So, like, does he not just get to enjoy the fucking paper and drink his coffee without feeling like the devil is going to judge him for it? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, that's my exact point. The idea that, like, Sean and Angela, like, we know that they have a rougher situation going on, and we know that it's been a journey for them, and they are in a good place, and they've made the right decision. They didn't get married young. They didn't force all their friends to attend their wedding and then try to bail them out. Like, they are standing on their own 2 feet as much as they possibly can, even though we do get acknowledgement that that someone else is paying for our apartments, which I assume for Angela is her father, and for Sean, it has to be Jack.
Like, I truly don't, like, it brings up more questions than answers when they're like, because the entire time I'm like, well, why is this so much harder for Sean and Angela than it is for Corey and Topanga? Okay, well, Sean and Angela have help. Well, yes, it's been implied that Alan isn't helping Corey, but he's never outright said, hey, I'm cutting you off. That would make us, the audience, think, wow, their lifestyle changed. is so drastic now.
Exactly. It happens.
Their lifestyle changes so drastic now because they got cut off. Like, there was nothing to insinuate that that was the issue. So, again, who's paying for Sean's apartment? Who is giving Sean living expenses? Why is it that Sean, whoever is helping him, is able to give him more than Corey is able to provide for himself? Like, there's so many questions that I kind of want to get into, and we kind of skip over it, and it's fine. But who is paying for Sean?
That's a very good question. Before we get too much, because I do want to come back to the Sean and Angela of it all, I want to say that Corey, again, is challenged to fix this thing. We get a cute scene of them, Corey saying, hey, I'm going to fix the sink. Topanga, and him playing Swap Monster. It's a really
so cute.
And it's cute. It's them as a married couple. It's newlyweds. I get it. Then we get the return of...
Can I just say that, like, this scene of them playing Swamp when they're just kind of chasing each other, I was like, oh, you know... There's been a few times where people have mentioned that there could have been a spinoff, there could have been a season 8 in New York, and if it had been more stuff like this, of them just, like, being an early married couple and learning what it's like to be on their own, like, I kind of would have been super into it. I feel like these storylines of them being, like, on their own for the first time is really where the show should have gone and continue to go if there were to be a season 8.
It's a little... It reminds me a little bit of How I Met Your Mother.
Yes.
You know How I Met Your Mother,
the early years of How I Met
with
Your Mother.
With Marshall and Lily.
Yes.
Like, that's what I'm getting from this. And again, like, this idea of, like, Corey going around and, like, they're chasing. He's like, oh, whatever you do, don't turn on the water. And, oh, no, I accidentally. And they're, like, having this fun flirtation, but they're also newlyweds. But then also the neighbor comes. And I was going to say Marisol Nickel comes back as Kelly and the baby. And then now you have a baby and all this other stuff. Like, I found that to be fun. And it reminded me of Marshall and Lily when they get their place and, like, having to build and figure it out as a couple. I liked that scene.
It gave me Mad About You vibes. And I was just like, this is the dynamic, the, like, early 20s kind of adult dynamic that I think could have made the show live on, is embracing that aspect of it.
It's so funny that you say that, because the other day someone sent me a link to interviews that the cast did at the time of the wedding episode, and in that interview Danielle says, we are changing the show a little bit, it's going to be a little less school, a little more Mad About You.
Wow.
So I thought that that was funny that you said exactly that, because that's what they were going for.
Wow. Exactly. Succeeded. Okay.
Okay, so let's wrap this up. So we have Topanga said something which I thought was important. She goes, I'm a good babysitter. And I was like, oh yes, again, Danielle used to babysit. By the way, why aren't you babysitting now for money? Open up a babysitting. Like, again, if you guys need finances, if you need things to do, use your resources, use your talents. Like, Danielle should be tutoring and babysitting. Corey can get a job. Like, these are all things that are possible. And yet they don't want to quite force them to do that. They just want to show them complaining, which is important. But also, I needed someone to be like, job postings are over there.
Yeah, exactly. Mention employment at some point. The one thing I want to say is that I really like at first I kind of dismissed the character of Kelly, but in this episode specifically, when she comes over, I'm like, she plays a really important part in making Topanga feel like this place is more like home by introducing the aspect of community, by saying, yes, wow, you're a good neighbor. And what that means to Topanga to hear, like, wow, we are neighbors. I guess, yeah, you live next door and we're helping each other out. I guess we are in this. Like, it just makes her feel more comfortable in that place simply by having Kelly just acknowledge that she's, like, enjoys them living there.
I also love the idea of her, them being like, hey, go see a movie. And she's like, can I go back and sleep? Can I just go sleep? That's all I want to do as a new mom. So I thought that was really great. And also the idea that the baby slept for them. The baby slept for them, and then Corey fixes it, and the water's clear. And
well, very proud. The thing I loved, which I thought was a very good Michael Jacobs moment too, was that Kelly's like, the baby loved Itsy Bitsy Spider. And then Topanga's like, hey, how's the doing with the water spout over there, Corey? And they were able to connect it and make it work.
Come on. Yeah. I love that. I didn't think about that, but you're right. That's good. And then we go, I think it's funny, if not very disgusting, if you think too closely about it, that Corey continues to just walk around with the sledge on him. But when he goes back to Allie and Amy's and they're like, look, drink it. And I was like, is it poisoned? They're like, no, we fixed our water pipes. And they're like, this is what we were trying to tell you. And I was like, well, I like this. A few things. One, Corey needs to apologize to Sean.
Sure.
Doesn't do that, and I don't think we'll ever see that happen. And then this idea that they were like, we fixed it, and we took care of the baby. Mm-hmm. And they're like, they took care of the baby. And I was like, no, y'all didn't. Like, they just said the baby. You have no context of what the baby means.
Nope.
Why are we not reacting to the idea that they said, we took care of the baby, and you know that they don't have, like, anyone else would be like, what do you mean, baby? I need answers. Give me clarity.
They don't want to know. They don't want to get involved. They don't want to get brought into it.
They're no, but I'm just saying, like, you would think that, like, when I hear that from a newlywed couple coming in and saying, and we took care of the baby, you would think that means Topanga's pregnant.
What baby should be the question. But
exactly. What baby? That's it. I just want to be like, they never acknowledged the baby. And I was like, we should be talking about the baby. Even having Amy have a line where she's like, excuse me, you said baby? What do you mean by baby? Like, anyway.
Honestly, I just think there was just so much going on that they just kind of ignore Corey at this point. But this, honestly, like, there's not a whole lot to say about this because it's so, like, well-written. It's so well done at this point of this kind of turnaround where you realize Alan's been trying to teach Corey this lesson and Corey's been kind of shunning. But the way that Corey's progression throughout this episode, his evolution, I feel like, is very true to what a 19-year-old would be. You know, I just... It's very good, but I don't really know what else to say about it other than I thought it was a well-acted scene and a orchestrated evolution for Corey to have throughout the episode. I don't really feel that Topanga had that big of an evolution, but I felt like Corey did.
Oh, we kind of skipped over that because I meant to say Topanga's calling Alan dad.
She's well, like, when dad, she wants something.
Dad. Yeah, and I was like, this is interesting. Again, like, it's so... Like, I like that we get Topanga to ride along. Topanga gets to be Corey's partner, the most that she's ever been Corey's partner. And it's fun to watch, and it's fun to see them be a couple, and it's fun to see her also get to be silly with her liars and all the stuff. But it does kind of rob her of her own agency and power, and that's just kind of something I would want more of. But overall, I did like it, and I thought we ended well, and we're calling Alan dad again, you know.
Sure. So Topanga really operates as comedic relief in this episode. Like, she's not really the person who learns the lesson along with Corey, even though at one point she tells Alan and Amy, like, I don't really get this either. And then at the end, she has that same aha, but it just feels more like Corey's moment. So it seems like Topanga's really just brought in for levity in a lot of these scenes. Like, she's the one who's like, I don't know, kind of forcing Corey to kind of have the change that he's having.
It's the boy in Boy Meets World. And there is there is a little bit of patriarchy of, like, Corey has to provide for his wife, and therefore she is there to give him something to work for.
Well, she plays with the baby while he fixes the sink. It's exactly. Traditional gender roles.
Exactly. So it's very weird that we're starting to see the show be more conservative. Like, the show isn't always that conservative, but every once in a while it rears its conservative head and you're just kind of like, interesting. Speaking of conservative, let's talk about Sean and Angela.
Okay. Yeah.
Again, this is the C storyline. We're going to come back to the B. But this idea of them having fun, being a good couple in the beginning, then going to visit Corey and Topanga, and Corey outright telling Sean that he doesn't deserve the life that he has, which, again, to me is disrespectful when you know Sean's history. Mm-hmm. And I get that it was Corey speaking out of turn, but, like, why would you say that to someone like Sean? Again, and mostly because you feel like he has a better living situation than you do. And then for Sean to feel the exact same way, it makes sense that Sean would internalize that and go to Angela and be like, hey, we didn't earn this. Like, what are we doing? You know, we have people helping us. Like, we haven't suffered. I wish Angela had been like, we will suffer in our own time in our own way. You don't have to be like Corey. But instead they go, oh, do you want what Corey has? You want to get married? And he's like, no. And they're like, nah. Yeah. And I'm like, no. Again, you just kind of backtracked it, but we need to be having these conversations. You know what I'm saying?
100%. And what's interesting is that Angela is like, hey, Sean, are you jealous of Corey and Topanga's suffering almost? But what's really happening, and I wish Angela could just kind of point out, like, hey, is this not just codependency? Is this that the person who used to be your everything is now questioning your life decisions? And because you've always attached your choices to their preferences, you no longer feel comfortable making decisions on your own. And so if they're questioning it, it's making you lack your own confidence in your own decision making. Like, that's really what's happening here. Yes. It has very little to do with the fact that Sean is overwhelmed with guilt now. It's like, no, you finally have a great living situation. Also, you're banging. Like, you're clearly banging. Like, why would you go back to, like, it just doesn't make sense to me that he would backtrack out of the situation that just happened. At least give him a few episodes to live together and, like, see if, like, issues happened. Like, maybe they don't. Like, when we
just got a dog, like, that's another thing. Like,
that dog got put down. No one's keeping that dog.
Well, it's funny because, like, so we kind of spoke over this, but the idea of, like, again, they were already living together. They were like, hey, it's me, Sean, and Rachel. And then later on, Rachel's like, hey, I'm going to give you two space. I already got an opportunity to be an RA. I'm going to move out. And I was like, okay. So we went through all of this. It's Jack's apartment.
It's musical chairs.
You were living with Eric. But then they invited you. But then you hooked up with Jack, so Eric moved out. But then, since you and Jack broke up, Jack, whose apartment it is, moved out. So now it's you and Angela and Topanga. But Topanga gets married, so she moves out and Sean moves in. And again, you have been the longest person here up until this point. However, because Sean and Angela are together, you're going to move out, leaving it just to be Sean and Angela. However, Angela and Sean feel like we aren't ready to take that step because we haven't earned suffering right enough. So Angela moves out, and I'm like, none of this makes sense. It is a game of musical chairs. The landlord has to be like, who is getting mail here? Who is it?
Yeah.
And ultimately, I was like, for Rachel to do all she did earlier this season and then voluntarily leave.
Yeah.
I would be so mad if I was Jack. But of course, we just have Jack and Eric move back. So.
Yeah. Like, honestly, the whole apartment switcheroo thing, I it's just confusing at this point. I remember being a kid and, like, I think I actually missed this episode in its live, like, airing.
Yeah.
And so when I came back and everyone was switched around, I was like, wait, what's going on? Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. there hasn't been enough time to help me understand as an audience viewing this every other episode or whatever that they were in 1999. Like, to be able to follow this switcheroo that's going around.
Switcheroo. And I thought about that. I was like, this episode is a linchpin for a lot of things, and you do have to watch it to kind of understand some things before and after. So I agree with you, because, like, if you miss this episode, you do, I imagine the next episode, you're confused on why everything is where it is.
Yeah.
The only thing I wanted to acknowledge also, having the dog, can you have a dog in that apartment that big? But then again, we buying houses for $80,000. Like, this is probably a wild west.
This is the kind of thing that, like, last week when you were talking about how, like, so you went through the process of getting a loan and then you just left. Like, oh, so you bought a dog and then just what? Now you and Eric are going to watch this dog? Like, I don't know if we're ever going to see this dog again, but can I just say, why not have Sean bring a pig into this? Why not connect the dots and have a little Corey? Because in season 5, when he was living with Jack and Eric, we were led to believe that he was still living with the little Corey. So clearly, he has an affinity for pigs. It would have just made sense for him to be like, I got my own place. I'm finally fucking doing it.
That is funny. I didn't think about that. That's funny. I kind of wish I had thought about it. I just thought that the dog was way too big. It's clearly, like, supposed to be a sight gag, but it was also like, there's no real thought put into
it's this. Like, like the a Megazord version of a Saint Bernard. I don't know what this actual dog is, but it's massive.
It is. It's huge. And then, as you said, they're like, oh, by the way, we're not going to keep this dog. They literally go, so who's going to tell him that we're not living together? I was so upset that by the end of it, Angela and Sean had decided to not stay together, because it was like, you don't have a reason to not be together other than you both think that, oh, now's not the time for us to have it easy. It's and they're like, promise me when the time comes, we'll have a raggedy place of our own. And it's like, why? Why would you want that? Why would you, as writers, why would you want for someone to want that?
And why isn't Angela being like, hey, remember how we said that we weren't going to try to just do everything the way Corey and Topanga do it? Like, we're our own couple. We can have our own path. Like, it's really showing the audience and the kids watching the show that there's really only one correct way to have a relationship.
Yep.
Whereas you should be able to introduce children to a variety of different relationship types, since kids come from a variety of different types of households. So I wish that there would have just been like an acceptance that, like, yeah, Corey and Topanga are doing it their way and we're doing it our way.
Exactly. But we can't have them live in sin, apparently. I think that's the ultimate.
That's the big one. The sin factor plays massive.
Okay. So I want to go to our B storyline now, because
what?
I've been waiting to talk about this. Okay. No, this is really important, because if ever I need a confirmation that Jack is a gay man, ooh, it is specifically with the introduction of Bridget. Bridget is played by Nicole Eggert, who is known as Jamie Powell on Charles in Charge, and played Summer on Baywatch. She was also in several other things. She's a really popular character actress. However, this woman comes in. Again, we get Eric being like, girls, girls, girls. Hot girl comes in. She's like, who's running this place? Jack is like, I'm the manager. She introduces herself. I'm your new boss. Immediately says, hey, by the way, got the job through nepotism, which I thought it was interesting that we at least acknowledged nepotism, because she immediately says, oh, I got this job because my daddy is chancellor. And I was like, again, don't know if that's how that works, but okay, whatever. She goes, I'm spoiled. I get what I want. She feels kind of flat as a character, but she immediately says that I get what I want, I'm spoiled, and Jack goes to her, and again, Eric is just blindsided by this. He's just like, oh my god, hot girl, whatever. And you would expect that other guys would be like, oh my god, hot girl. Yeah. Eric's like, if we want to talk good looking and rich daddy, you ain't messing with me. I do it better, and like, I look better doing it. And I was like, this is a gay man. Like, you absolutely are like, oh, I am not impressed by your charms, your look, anything. I am just as much of a spoiled daddy's girl as you are, and I'm not going to let you get my friend out. And I was like, this is all the evidence I've ever needed of Jack being a gay.
Because
man.
At what point Bridget's like, so are we gonna make out? Are we going to do this or not? And he's like, no.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I would never, and I'm not gonna let my friend either. And I was like, oh, again, he's sticking up for his man. I don't care what any of y'all say. My head can have it all there, because again, it's like, they could have had it be this like, oh god, I'm seduced by her and I hate her, you know, like all this other stuff. But no, they specifically make a point to say that Jack has zero interest in her. He's already like good looking, rich, that's my world, baby doll.
But they also make it a point to have Eric say, I'm a like Teletubby,
not the purple one
though.
Yep. I knew where you were going.
Why is that joke in there?
Because we need to make sure that they know. What's also funny is that Jack does seem to have a bit of misogyny himself, which to be fair, gay men do have. But he's like, when he goes and he goes, tell her, I'm the man. I'll do it when I want to. I was like, that's your boss. Like, even if you don't like her, it's still your boss. You still have to be respectful. But then she says, take off my shoe and suck my third toe. And I was like, okay, so what are we doing here? No one is doing. By the way, this is still an open student union. Students are still unionizing all over the place.
it's suck my toe, Eric fainting. Like, it's fun, I guess. Like, it's funny. I don't know. Like, can I be honest? The entire time that Bridget was there, I couldn't help but having that scratch my head season 7 feeling of, haven't we had the story before? Wasn't there a girl named Desiree who was spoiled and Eric was chasing after and she treated him like shit? And then he eventually got to the point where he learned and realized, like, wow, there are women out there who will do this to me. I need to be smarter. Like, we've done this. Why isn't Eric getting better? Are you even acknowledging the fact that, like, I've also have experience with women like this? Something.
Well, A, Eric's simple. We know that. Like, that's just, like, we allow Eric to be simple. Mm. But what I think is important, to your point, Desiree is able to still seduce Jason. Jason is equally won over by Desiree in the end.
Okay.
However, we make it clear that Jack has zero interest in her at all. I just think it's amazing. It's so amazing. Jack doesn't look at another girl after Rachel. He is all about Eric and protecting Eric. And I think that's something worth looking into.
This is very true.
The last thing I was going to say is that, as you were talking about, you'd be kind of confused, is the fact that Bridget fires Jack. And that doesn't really have any end date.
Well, no. Can we just talk about, like, what Eric and Jack are talking, and then Jack's like, well, she's going to come over and you got to be like, shut your cake hole, Irene.
Yeah, which, exactly.
Is this a quote from Me, Myself, and Irene? What is this from?
That they I have keep no idea.
It feels like an inside joke that somehow Michael Jacobs was cool with. Like, it feels very niche.
Yeah, it does feel very niche.
And it does make Jack feel misogynistic. And I've searched this quote. I feel like it's only from the show, yet I can't understand why it would only be from the show. It feels like it should be.
No, again, I just think it, like, I've known enough misogynistic men to be like, no, it's just shut your cake hole, Irene. It's just like, it doesn't even have to be a
her name
thing. It's just the idea of disrespecting her and the way to put her back in her place. And I think that that's terrible. I do not like that we're doing this. However, just gives credit to my theory. So,
yeah.
Anything else you want to say?
No, I feel like this, again, mirrored the Desiree storyline so much. I really wish there had been some crossover there. Like, this idea that Jack is also, you know, a rich kid who comes from this lifestyle, it kind of reminded me of Jonathan Turner when it was like, oh, you're really from Connecticut and you're really this person. Like, I wish that Jack would have had the point where, instead of leaning into it, he would have been like, you know, like, I've learned to treat people with more respect or something. Yes. Like that, where he's like teaching Bridget or helping Bridget versus kind of like being like, well, I can be a better rich snobby person than you. Like, I didn't really care for that. So
I love that. I didn't think about that idea, but the idea of her, of Jack going to Bridget and being like, hey, I also used to use money and my looks as a way to get through life, but I'm going to tell you, it's not going to last. And you're going to, and even if he has like this huge speech to her that is like, hey, I'm trying to connect, and she's like, yeah, you're fired, I don't need it. Like, that's fine. But at least we would have kind of like a little mini arc. And in this, we really don't. She fires Jack and that's it.
That's just the end of it.
There's no resolution. There's no ending for Eric or Jack or Bridget. And that kind of makes me upset. Because,
or if, like, we had this thing where Bridget fires Jack, but then afterwards she kind of gives him a look like she has a little bit of a crush on him, kind of setting up something in the future. Like, I don't know. Just give me something to make this storyline feel worth it.
I agree. Like, that's that my real thing is, like, it has no conclusion. So that's why it feels kind of out of place. And I, as I said, I think it would have worked better in the previous episode, because this uses Jack and Eric in a way that would have made sense to use Eric last episode than what we're doing right now. Anywho, Brad moment. What is your Brad moment?
Honestly, all of the sin, the slut stuff, like that stuff, like basically shaming Sean and Angela for premarital sex was like a key storyline in this episode, and I'm not here for it.
I agree with you. I think that's great. Because you did that one, I'm going to choose Bridget's whole sexual harassment of her employees. I'm really, and then of course the entire Bridget storyline. I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, I get that we're supposed to have a woman in charge, girl boss, yes, but the idea that she is sexually assaulting her employees, and we respond to that not with empathy or sympathy, but just with misogyny, put a woman back in her place. I'm like, ugh.
There's two things I want to say about that. One is Jack at one point says, what would be embarrassing if I let a surgically augmented daddy's girl ruffle my feathers? And I was like, oh, okay, now we're shaming her for that too. Okay, we're really getting there.
Gay man, I'm telling you. As a gay man, Jack is written as gay man.
To contradict that, I feel like Eric has some really funny jokes in the scene where one, he's like, meets the new boss, it's Bridget Murphy, and goes, Murphy, like the bed. And I was like, great delivery, so funny. And then there's another one where Bridget's like, my dad is the chancellor, I like to call him daddy. And Eric goes, I like to call him daddy too. And I was just like, I don't know, like, you're so funny when you're not forced to be in ridiculous situations. Like, you can make the grounded, normal stuff funny. Like, we don't have to be so over the top. So I just wanted to point that out as we were kind of...
No, I agree. I loved it. Feeny lesson. What's your Feeny lesson of this episode?
That the greatest joys in life come when you take pride in your life, take pride in your home, take pride in your relationships, and you work to make them better. There's gifts that come from that that are a bigger reward than the initial monetary or product value of whatever it is you wanted. That's a real long way of saying just that, like, the best things in life are free, maybe. I don't know.
No, I don't think it's the best things in life are free. I think that, or if that's your lesson, that's fine. But what I think you were saying and what I'm going to use is Alan's lines of figure it out. So you have to figure it. Sometimes life is going to be hard. Figure it out. And how do you feel about doing things yourself?
Yeah.
Now that you've done it yourself, you feel better. Not that it was solved for you, but that you were able and capable of figuring it out.
And one thing I just want to say, because I kind of forgot to mention this earlier too, was that I love when Alan says, you know, when me and your mom were struggling, that was the best part of our marriage, and I would never want to take that away from you. And I think there is something to, like, the trauma bonding of, like, starting a new life and, like, kind of going out on your own. And, like, that's helpful in those, like, early times in the relationship. So I'm sure something in there, there's, like, a very eloquent Feeny lesson, but you guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, because it's really funny. Like, even, like, the trauma bonding of it all, I think constantly about how, like, when me and my husband got our dog, like, that became, like, we created our own language because we had these, like, inside jokes because we had gone through something together. We were both watching him develop. We were both, we had, like, little stories of, like, hey, this happened and this happened.
Yeah.
And I think, like, again, like, we were playing Swamp Monster. It's like, oh, you will remember that. You will remember building and refurnishing and having something in common that you can tell later down the line. And I do think that that's really important. Like, again, it doesn't necessarily have to be trauma. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the shared interest of it all, the shared experience of it all, is what makes a relationship.
Can I add to that real fast? We were on... This is relevant, I promise. I was on, like, a corporate meeting, like, a while ago, and they were like, you know, how can we build, you know, camaraderie amongst employees? And I was like, you know what's so funny? Every white collar job I've ever had has struggled with building camaraderie, but every blue collar job I ever had, like, the camaraderie was, like, there. And I think it was because, like, we were in the trenches together.
Yes.
And there was something about that that built a bond with me and, like, those people I worked Black Friday with, you know, because we were just, like, up at 5 a.m. and we had to get to the store and we had to open it up. And, like, there was something about that that built a bond that I'm not able to get when I'm just, like, Zoom meeting. And so I there's something I think that can be applicable to what Alan's talking about here.
To your point, the thing is, building camaraderie has to deal with you guys having something in common other than the trauma, or being able to talk about the trauma in a free and open space. Like, companies are like, how do we create bonding? All right, like, just pay for people on the company's hours. So like, I don't know if it's online and Zoom, everyone sign in and we're going to play like video games together. And your bosses will not be there because they don't need to be there. Yeah. You don't need to bond with your boss. Your boss is your boss. And there's nothing you can do that will change that. But you do need to be able to trust each other. You do need to be able to be like, oh, hey, he's really good at this. He's really good at that. Like, what is it called? I'm thinking of escape rooms, all these things. It's like, yeah, you can do that on the company's time, on the company's dollar, and without having to like make us do anything extra other than show up.
And there's also something to like when you're grumpy and you have to be at a work like early in the morning, when you find that person who can make you laugh and kind of make that a little bit easier for you, that's that bond. That's that camaraderie that has nothing to do with like your employer trying to manufacture something. It's just like, no, this person was speaking what was on my mind right now and they said it, and now I rock with Mark.
Absolutely. The ability to like look over, like the people who from my previous job I really connected with, the people who I could look over with and just look and be like, girl. You know, or be like, we gonna chat later.
And that's how you find your people. That's really how it happens.
Okay. Grade. What grade are you giving this?
I'm going to give this episode a B minus.
Okay.
It was okay. Like I said, there were things I liked about it. I loved it. Honestly, if the Eric and Jack storyline was gone, I probably would have liked the story a lot better. If it was just Eric and Jack and Corey and Topanga and the Sean and Angela stuff wasn't there, I think it would have worked better. But the combination of the Angela and Sean stuff and the Jack and Eric stuff, I was just like, you know what? There's too many beefs I have with both of these storylines for me to feel completely comfortable giving this a higher grade. So
I agree with you. I'm going to give it a C for that very reason. I think the A storyline is fantastic. I think we do really good lessons. I love these life lessons that we're learning. I love to see Corey and Topanga be a couple. However, the other two storylines, I have problems with both. And it does feel like it's one too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Like I feel like we could have removed one of these and had a better meal.
I will say this. I can't remember the last time I've found Corey as likable as I have in this episode and the episode before. Like these last two episodes, I'm like, wow, I like Corey a lot more than I have, especially all through season six. So like there's an improvement happening, I think.
I agree. And I will say, I want to give credit. I feel like season seven, I understand what people are like. It's not as bad.
Yeah.
At least so far, it's not as bad as I was expecting it to be. We did have a rough start. It really did start off with like, what are we doing? But now, especially that we're married, I feel like, okay, these storylines are making sense. I like what we're doing here. I just feel like sometimes we throw in a little wackiness to like even it out. And I'm like, we didn't need that wackiness.
Yeah, we'll see how you feel after next week's episode.
Okay, here we go. Oh, yeah, next week's episode. Okay, we are going to do our Pod Meets World reacts. So if you want to check those out, go over to our Patreon. We are going to talk about Pod Meets World Janitor Dad, and then we're going to come back. Homework. What do you got for homework?
My homework for this week is, you know, I am going to let you start with homework.
I don't really have homework. Oh, actually, no, I take that back. Because I was looking. I've watched a lot of stuff. None of it was really good.
Yeah, like same. Like I've been watching stuff and you know what? I know that there's big things that I have to watch, but I've just been like kind of busy. And the problem with like for example, everyone's been telling me to watch The Bear, but it feels like kind of a homework assignment at this point. And like now I know that like I need to dedicate time and sit down and watch it. And because of that, it feels like a bigger chore. So I'll just put on something passive and end up watching 8 hours of it. And that's been how it's gone for me lately.
I completely understand it.
I will say this, that I rewatched A Quiet Place recently and I fucking love that movie. I love that movie. It's so well done. It's so like quiet and quiet. It's so it's paced so well and it builds up perfect tension. And I don't know if I'm gonna make that my homework, but sure, I'll make that my homework. I'm sure I've recommended it before, but I did rewatch it recently and I absolutely loved it.
A Quiet Place, the first one, great, zero notes, fantastic. The second one, very conservative, very what are we doing? I like it kind of like takes away all of the lessons like it removes all of the lessons that we had in the first one. And I'm like, why did we do this? Have you seen the trailer for the third one?
I was going to say the trailer for the third one looks aight, but I also don't give a fuck about sequels anymore. Just drop it. Just let it go.
I disagree. I'm here for it because
like sequels in general, the concept of a Frozen like 5.
No, I'm not in for the concept of a Frozen 5. I think that we now live in a world where there are anthologies. We now live in a world with IP, and I like the idea of, I don't need a Frozen 5 where we are dealing with the same characters, but can I have a Frozen 5 where we learn about the other magic that is in the kingdom? Can I get a Frozen 5 where I don't know, some like we learn about snowmen and like all this other stuff? I don't know, maybe. Like, I don't mind IP and expanding the world, A, because that's where we're at right now, and I just learned to accept that. But B, I also think I saw the trailer for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, and I'm really excited about that. Because again, we're not following James Franco from the first one. We have a whole new world with whole new characters. Prey 2 is getting a sequel, and I'm like, okay, let me see where that one's at, because we liked how Prey did something new. I don't mind living in that universe and expanding the world. I do mind when we have to tell the same story over and over again with the same people. That bothers me.
I feel like the sequel situation, especially like, Disney recently announced like all of their movies for the next 5 years are just sequels on sequels on sequels. I feel like what's been happening is as people have been streaming more over the last 10 years, they've come to terms with this idea of like serialized storytelling, which has been translating into film with like the Marvel movies are a great example of that. And it just feels like everyone is trying to turn the movie experience into like a show that like has multiple episodes that you watch and things like that. The problem is that really good shows have a showrunner that's making sure that all of that shit makes sense.
I agree.
Whereas when you look at like, I don't know, like, Toy Story 4 or 5 that's about to come out or whatever, I'm just like, at this point, it's like, there's no way that you guys are taking the care, that you guys are telling a story that maybe you had in mind a while ago. You guys are just cash grabbing, and I'm having sequel fatigue. I would much rather go out, find an experimental film, an art house. At this point, in general, like the big blockbuster movies, I'm kind of over.
But here's the thing. Your problem is exactly what I said, which is that we have the same characters and we're doing the same thing over again. And that, I agree with you. I don't need a Toy Story 5 where we have Woody and Buzz. Why? Because I feel like I've come to a resolution with those characters so many times at this point in time. But if we went back and we explored Sid's toys, and like what they went up to and what lessons they learned and all this other stuff. See, you're already intrigued. Mm-hmm. It's already a little bit better. Like, that's why I'm excited about A Quiet Place 3, because that one's a prequel. We're not opening the door and they're like, hey, John Krasinski, how did you get here? It's like, no.
It takes place in New York. It's a different setting. Yeah. You're right. I do love that. I love the idea of like, hey, this is an interesting story. I want to see it from a different perspective. I love the idea of seeing that with Harry Potter. I would love to see stories where it's like, you know, the magical wizarding world in Hawaii or the wizarding world in Africa or like somewhere else. Yes. Like, give me somewhere a new setting and like, let's explore these ideas under different political and, you know, social constructs. Love that. But again, like, I don't need to see Elsa do her bit with Anna again. And like, I
that's
don't.
What I'm saying. I don't need to see that. And I agree with you. That being said, my homework is 3 of Abbott Elementary.
Because okay.
I think the difference is what you were saying is with television, it is fun to kind of, I think we're losing what makes movies and what makes television television.
Yeah,
television is supposed to be serialized. You are supposed to come back and you see these people and they are progressing, but they're still the same characters. And that's what we're getting with season 3 of Abbott Elementary. It came back in a really fun way, came back with a two-parter. By the time this comes out, I think it'll be like on episode 3 or like 4 or 5. And I'm really having fun with the season. It's great to see the characters again. It feels like a classic television sitcom that we can all come together and talk about and have fun with in a way that I don't really think of. I can't think of another show where everyone is watching and it's a comedy and we're having fun. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like there's Abbott Elementary is one of the few modern sitcoms that I feel like kind of can stand with the giants of the past. Like, I feel like you could put that up there with some of the better sitcoms of the 90s and 2000s, and it still works in an age where the sitcom is dying or dead. Like, that's still a prime example of how to do it right.
Absolutely. And I don't know. It was fun to be back. It was fun to see these characters again. I love the way that they are constantly teaching us about the field of teaching. I think that that's amazing. And I think everyone should check out Abbott Elementary season 3. And then as far as movies go, I'm with you. A classic rewatch. Go watch A Quiet Place. I think I might even do that because it is a good movie.
It's a great movie. Yeah. Love it.
Okay, you guys, thank you so much for joining us. As usual, if you want to give us your homework recommendations or if you have anything that you would like to say to us, hit us up at brometsworld@gmail.com or at brometsworld on all of our social platforms. Subscribe if you're on YouTube. Follow us if you're on Instagram. Check out our Patreon for added content. Rate us if you haven't done that. I don't think we've said rate us in a while, so rate us. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, and give us a good rating, guys. Like,
absolutely.
Don't fuck around. Like, we're trying to beat the algorithm. Help us out.
All five. Mm-hmm. You're like, how many stars should I give them? Five.
Five.
I got five on it. I have no idea why, but that was good for me. Okay, so I also would like you guys to remember, as Feeny says, dream.
I would like you guys to remember, as Feeny says, to try.
And I would also like to remind you guys, as Feeny says, do good.
Dream, try, do good.
Oh, hey, those are all Feeny sayings.
There you go. How about that? We're learning lessons every day.
Later, bros.
Later, bros. This episode of Brown Meets World was produced by Siege and edited by Tony Curtis. Brown Meets World is a Two Free Tokens media production.
Bye.
Bye.